Welcome to this episode of Practical Product Management, where we talk about how theory is great in product management, but product management is done in context, so it has to be practical. Today, we have our guest, Steve Jasper, and I'm going to let him introduce himself, and then we're going to dive in. So, Steve, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So, I'm Steve Jasper, and I'm retired. I just recently retired. I've got about 25 years of payments product experience. Among various companies, from very large to very small. And I'm excited to talk to you guys today and delve into the topics.
I love it. Like, full disclaimer, though, everybody, like, Leah and I have known Steve for a long time and worked with him in a couple spots. So it's really good to see you again, Steve, and have you on our podcast here. So Leah told you our sort of, like, reason for being is that, like, product really happens in context. And while theory and frameworks are fantastic and they're good tools, they're not rule books. And this is probably something you've seen across your career. But I'm just wondering how you would react to our thesis that things happen in context.
I think product management does happen in context. Very much so. And the reason I think that is because, you know, I've been, like I said, from large to very small companies. And I would say the very first company where I was a product manager, we started a payment processing company from scratch. And it was just, you know, fly by the seat of your pants, and you just did what came next.
Yeah.
And, you know, customer, you know, once we were live and processing payments, and, you know, what do we do next? It's like, what are customers asking for? Okay, so let's tick, tick, tick. Okay, let's do that next. And, you know, it was just, was there going to be a PRD or any kind of research or anything other than just at finding out what they're asking for? That was it. And then you just go build it. And you're working at very large companies, you know, you get into the routines of the process of product management. Mm-hmm. And, you know, going back to when I was at the startup and we needed to build a virtual terminal, because that's what customers were asking for. We needed to build a COM object for the Windows environments way back when. And, you know, we hired somebody to do it, and we just got it done, and it took a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Large company, you go through the process of product management, the research, the white papers and the PRDs and the presentations. And a year later, you might have half of what you were asking for, you know? And so I've seen it all. I've seen everything in between too. You know, even with small companies, most recently, you know, with just 10, 15 people in the company, like the last one I was at, you know, we're still writing business documents and PRDs, trying to be grown up.
Right.
And, you know, you kind of, I find that you kind of got to be in between there somewhere to get out a product sooner than later.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so, really, yeah, I've seen a lot, and it's been fun. Yeah. You know, I've learned a lot in all the different environments.
Yeah.
But now I'm ready to retire.
They wore you out. Everybody wore you out.
He's like, if I have to write one more PRD, I'm done.
No, I needed to write one about how to retire.
Right. It might come in handy. Well, it's funny because I'm working at a startup right now, and I've been burying them in documents, right? Like, they've never had this concept. They don't really write much down, right? And yeah, they're lovely, and to some degree it's worked. On the other hand, there isn't anything codifying what we're doing, how we're doing it, how we're thinking about things, right? So I think lately I've just been like, here are all the things, go read the things and let me know how you feel about them. And everybody's like, oh, it's so much. So sometimes it's like necessary. Sometimes it's like, okay, that's too much, right? So it's kind of finding the levers, right? Like,
yeah,
figuring out what the team needs in the moment to get things out.
Yeah, exactly.
I like to think of it in terms of like just enough to justify the business investment. So if it's like tiny, like, don't write an enormous PRD, like, just go learn quickly, right? I'll give you some time, a little bit of resource, go learn as much as you can and give me information back. If it's big, like, I'm sorry, a document, you know, a one-page document, two-page document is probably not enough,
right,
to justify a massive investment. And there is a sort of like a flex in between, you know, enough documentation and too much process. Like somewhere in there is good.
Yeah. And I think it also depends on what the end goal is. At one company I was at, and I think you guys both have some experience with this company. We needed to revamp the engineering structure. Mm-hmm. And I was asked to write a white paper and a PRD for the new engineering structure. And I was like, okay, I will muddle through this, but this should be more of an engineering project.
Right.
And, you know, and then after leaving that company and working with other companies, you know, talking to some of the technical leaders in the other companies, they were like, why did they have you do that? You know? And so,
and like we have the writer over here who will write the things, and you're like, that's not my job.
Exactly. And you already have the specs because you already know what it does. You're just, yeah.
They're like, help us do this, and you're like, no, write it yourself. Yeah. Well, that's what I think was interesting about working at Amazon is that the engineers were good writers too. They had to be.
Yeah.
Right. So there wasn't this pass on like, oh, we write code. And so we don't have to write papers and we don't have to write. Mm-hmm. They had to write architecture documents and they had to write, you know, concepts and they had to do that stuff. So they had to be good authors as well, which made them really good partners when you wrote something.
Yeah.
Because you could put it in front of them, and they could critique it for real, not just like pass. Well, I'm not writing this, so I don't care. Right. Yeah.
And I really enjoyed working at Amazon for that reason. The fact that the engineers were really almost as much as experts on the system and what needed to be done as the product folks.
Yeah.
Like you could sit down with them on a, you know, with a cup of coffee and say, all right, you know what, how do we want this to look? How do we want it to work? Right. And, we know what the input is and we know what the output's got to be. So how do we get it there?
Right.
And they were great. And that was the thing I enjoyed the most about 9 years at Amazon.
Yeah. Well, it's the ownership, right? It's that sense of it's true teamwork. It's true cross-functional collaboration. Everybody's engaged. Everybody wants to own. Yeah. And if you don't want that, you're likely not a good fit in that environment because you're just like, hey, just hand me a ticket and tell me what you want. It's not going to work, right? Like, because everybody's going to look at you and be like, well, do you not ever want to get promoted?
Right? Or why did you pick that one?
Right. Why is that the ticket you picked? And why are you doing it that way? Right. So, yeah, I think it is, there's a rigor to what is done in those kinds of environments. Mm-hmm. Right.
And that allows you as a product manager to really focus on the customer, the problem, and the business opportunity. Yeah. And then have that really healthy debate with the people that have to design and build the systems. Yeah. And they have an opinion. Mm-hmm. And they're going to challenge whether they think your problem statement is right or not because they have a different perspective. And I think it makes a really well-rounded product.
Yeah. I just had an argument last week about, you know, you can't, it's almost impossible to hire good engineers who also care about the product. And I was all, what are you talking about?
Where are you looking for people?
And this person was like, well, you'd have to give up on the quality of their technical skills. And I'm all, what are you talking about? Like, I didn't even change my answer. Yeah. I still think you're crazy, right? Even though now I think you're crazier, right? So it was such an interesting discussion because I was all, you've hired the wrong people, right? Yeah. So Steve, what would you say in terms of, it may either be payments or product management, but what do you feel like has stayed the same from when you began? And what do you feel like is radically different? And you can go whichever direction you want, kind of product management or payments, whichever suits you.
Obviously the tools are different.
Yeah.
You know, over time and things have changed, you know? And so that's an easy one where you're picking out the difference. Another is the ability to work remotely.
Okay.
I know COVID came along and then the world started working remotely and a lot of people have returned to the office, but there's still a lot of businesses out there, companies that are working almost 100% or just under 100% remotely. Yeah. And it can be done. And it's... can be done successfully.
Right.
And so I think that's still a game changer in the world. Some of the things that have remained the same when it comes to payments, and specifically your Rails or Rails.
Right. True. Now you have to unpack what that means for those people who in the audience who aren't payments geeks like us.
How do you transmit or send the transaction from one place to another?
Yeah.
And so Rails are Rails. And, you know, you might have some fancy Venmo or PayPal or something sitting on top of the Rails, but behind the scenes, it's the Rails.
Yeah.
Even with Stripe, you know. And this is how pretty can you make the packaging on top of it.
Right.
And then how expensive it can be. You know, and that's one of the things that I find has remained the same as well. Payments companies are still trying to charge as much as they can get per transaction or as a portion of the transaction.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we started the payment company that I and a couple other guys started, you know, that's what we started out doing.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, you start to learn that you can play with the numbers a little bit. But still, the goal is to, you know, as get as much as you can.
Right.
And today, with all the nice companies out there that they're processing payments, if you're not an Amazon or Expedia, you're going to have to pay for payment processing. I mean, everybody does.
Sure.
But you're going to have to pay, you know, a pretty penny for it.
Yeah,
and it's likely going to be pretty hard to figure out where the pennies are situated in your bill.
even when you figure it out, where you know what portion of the fees go here and go there and everything like that, it's still, I think, an exercise. I'm not going to say in futility, but almost futility to get to lower your costs.
Oh, of course,
yeah, totally. Well, and I mean, I remember in the, you know, when I was in payments before I came to Amazon, and I had been, I thought my whole career was in payments. And I just remember we were talking then about that it's a commodity business. It's a commodity business. It's a commodity business. And it still is. And so with the commodity business, you either learn how to add things onto it that get stickiness and create more revenue chains, or you just try to squeeze the commodity, right? What? To its like, you try to squeeze down what you're going to, you know, get, what they're going to take, who's going to get this much. And I think like we're still, that game hasn't changed.
No, it hasn't. Right? It hasn't, you know, and just recently I was talking to actually a friend of mine that used to work for a specific payment processing company that was doing ACH. And they were charging the company that I was with $1 per transaction.
Holy,
oh my gosh.
And it's a 4-cent transaction.
No, it was less than that.
Exactly. More like 2 cents. I'm saying that's max.
Like 2 cents, maybe a penny, depending on how much volume they were doing. And then they were
paying quarter of a cent.
Yeah, and we were laughing because the company was able to negotiate it a 50% savings
down to 50 cents. I would be changing to some other payment method.
Well, you know, there's pros to having the bells and whistles on top of the service. And how much are you willing to pay for that?
Yeah.
But still, when it comes down to it, the rails are the rails.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's super, super, super interesting. What's something that you worked on, maybe a decision you made or something that you worked on that you just still look back on and go, yeah, I'm super proud of that?
I was my most proud moment in payments, I guess. Was when I figured out I was on the Amazon App Store building their payment processes. And I figured out a way to pay international app developers their royalties from sales in China.
Nice.
And be able to get the funds to them that they had earned in China.
Awesome.
And the requirements around that solution, and from what I could figure out, that was the only possible automated solution. I'm really proud of that because it was a lot to figure out and a lot to get signed off on, and we operated payment processing at a loss because it was such an extreme solution, but it was the only solution.
Yeah.
No, I think that's one of the things I really admire about Amazon is that they really do put the customer first. And sometimes there are products that you will launch that do operate at a loss because they either benefit the customer in a way that adds value to the relationship, or it's a lever for a different part of the relationship with the customer.
Yeah.
But we're just going to talk about payments here for a second. One of the things I want to talk to you both about, because I like payments is something that people are like, oh, that's easy. And I've actually like received a note from a CEO of a company that I was with. It's like, why is this so hard? It's just payments. You've worked in this before. And it's like, I'm not sure people understand the complexity of getting some of this stuff done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So why don't both of you talk about the difficulty that you both have had presenting a simple user experience and obfuscating the complexity of actually moving money around using the interwebs, because it's not as easy as people like to seem to think it should be.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I'm trying to think of a good example.
I mean, the China one was great. I'm going to make you come up with a different one, Steve. Leah, you've had a few.
Yeah. The couple of things come to mind. Like, I was working in payments when you still in the U.S. Still took checks to the bank, still Mickr encoded them, and still flew them around the United States on a fleet of planes that the Federal Reserve had. And that then there were, you know, some plane crashes, and suddenly we needed a different solution. And that was really this whole kind of concept of take a picture of your check, send that out, like all of those things. Like, we did that in the business check space, and that was like game changer, because you didn't have to then hand over these checks to some kid that was going to run them to the bank and stand in line and miss the deadline on Friday when you needed to pay your employee people on Monday, or, you know, whatever. And that was, when you think about it now, it sounds insane, right? But at the time, setting up a scanner and scanning checks and sending the image and having it encoded and having it, you know, not have to be taken anywhere was stunning.
Yeah.
Right. Because I was an ACH nerd right back then. And so that was exceptional. And I just think we changed how businesses could feel secure in their payments moving and getting those things in next day or within a day and a half at the time, you know, and just being able to access their money, like their actual money, and use the money. Right. And that's one that really comes to my mind as an early, like now sounds insane, but as an early game changer, it was a big one.
Yeah, I think the internet in itself is a game changer when it comes to payments.
Yeah.
I mean, is it something as simple as when I go to the bank, on the rare occasion that I go to the bank and deposit a check or do some kind of account maintenance at the bank, mm-hmm. and the teller will always ask, do you want a receipt? What for? I have an internet. I have an app.
Exactly.
Why would I need a receipt? And I like just basic things I think people misunderstand is like, so let's talk about timing. So both of you have worked in places where there's an e-commerce aspect of this. And at what stage do you initiate the transaction? Is it a credit card? Do you take an authorization? How long until you do the capture? Does the authorization expire? Wow. If it's a larger transaction, that needs to go into accounts receivable somewhere.
Yeah.
And then someone needs to pay for that either now or later. Like, these are accounting level transactions. And I think that's sort of like what people sort of miss out on sometimes,
yeah.
is that it's not just like, you know, you owe me $2. It's like, I have a thing, I've created a good, I've created a receivable for $2 somewhere in my accounting system. Leah, I still remember you drawing little T's on the, like, the T accounts on the whiteboard, and showing me money movement, how it all has to be accounted for, and then how you sort of, like, reconcile that across systems, how do you show it? Like, just there's so much. And I'm not even talking about foreign exchange, which you all know is my favorite part. And then what happens during sort of like the exchange rates between auth and settle, or time, like when an invoice is created, when you actually have to pay for it, and like who gets to eat it for or suffer from.
You, You're okay. Absolutely right, Marilyn. The last role I was in, we were building a complete product from scratch, which included payment processing. And so I was focused on the payment piece and building out the requirements for that. And one of my major requirements was, let's not forget about accounting.
Right.
You know, and this is the information that they need to have, and this is where we need to get it from. And they're like, but that's not the widgets that we're selling. I'm like, well, we're going to pay for a lot of pain later if you don't do this now.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. I mean, Marilyn and I worked, we were Expedia. We had a conversation where everybody said, like, well, we have this leakage problem and it's unsolvable.
We were both like,
it's just money moving and it has to go from here to there and it has to go somewhere. So where does it go? Well, it gets split up. Still money moving to two places. And I was like, Marilyn and I were just sitting there. She's like, Leah doesn't think it's impossible.
What do you mean leakage? Like, our systems are dropping transactions. It's unmonitored. It's not leaking. It's
if you want to leak that into my bank account, great. Otherwise, we're not going to let it happen.
They made a few movies about money leaking like that, didn't they?
Where's my red stapler? I've actually got one somewhere.
Yeah, it was nuts. Like, I remember that. But also, like, just the little, like, what is, like, if someone asks me, like, what's one of the things you're proudest of, I will still say taking 3 seconds out of the round trip transaction processing for the card present processing at Amazon.
Yeah.
It was a 6 second round trip. I took it to sub 3 and it had 24 hops.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And 2 of those seconds belong to Chase. Yeah. I only had a second for our 22 of the hops. Right. Mm. But like, if you don't understand what it is we do, Marilyn, then someone will say, oh, it's simple. It's just payments. It's like, it's not simple.
There's a reason you're getting paid $1 a transaction, FYI. Like, someone's making some money in the middle because you don't understand what's going on.
That's why so many companies will, you know, just do it themselves without bringing in somebody that has experience with it. And then a year and a half later, they go, holy smoke, look at these costs.
Right, right.
You know, and then, you know, where is this money going? And then maybe even there's leakage because they didn't bring accounting in.
Yeah, nobody looked. Well, yeah. That's why why companies like Stripe and Klarna and PayPal, they can embed their payment services in people's environments because they're like, we'll just take care of the whole thing for you. Meanwhile, they're just like, taken. Right.
And they're adding value that the company just can't.
Yeah.
That they don't understand they need to invest in. And if they were hired the right people and built the right products, they would have spent it anyways. They just would have owned it.
I'm not going to say which company it is, but one of those companies you mentioned was even charging in addition to payment processing by per API call.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I know which one. This is the secret society we get to be in.
Yes.
When you know payment stuff, you're like, yeah, I know that works. I know who did that. I know what that does.
Yeah. So if you're doing a auth and capture separately,
you get 2 API charges and a payment processing charge.
Yes.
Yes. God help you have a refund or a split refund.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. So a lot of people that listen to our podcast, Steve, are product managers, and they range from junior to senior. But let's talk about the ones that are just sort of starting out now, because they're coming into a very different world than sort of like the three of us have been in for the last N years. We don't put numbers on those things, but N years.
And longer than that.
So it's been more like X or Y.
X plus Y years, right?
What advice do you have for product managers that are just sort of starting out in their career and they may not know what skills they really need to double down on?
You know, the internet's there, so there's a lot of information on the internet. But beyond that, one of the things I think Amazon does well, and unfortunately or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, I never took advantage of it, was the mentorship.
Mm.
You know, find somebody that is already established in product management in a company, same company if possible, if not, you know, maybe at somewhere else, right. And ask them to be your mentor. I think that's one of the best things that you can do for your career.
Yeah.
You know, there's always learning, you know, how to write a PRD or a BRD, whatever your company calls them, and the white papers like Amazon, et cetera. But, you know, there's tools that explain how to do that. And you can learn how to do that. Once you learn how to do it, that's, you know, becomes rote. But beyond that, you know, how do you want to grow your career? Where do you want to go? You know, I liken it to, you know, having an advisor in college.
Yeah.
You know, find somebody that can help you learn what you really want to do and how to do what you're doing right now.
Yeah.
And I think that's some of the best things you can do as a junior or a new product manager.
Would you say that from a mentoring perspective, one of the things that, I mean, like what comes to my mind is that, you know, like you said, you can go kind of study up on the tools and the frameworks and figure out how to do them. But what often I find product managers, young product managers seek from me is like, they're in this situation. They don't know how to navigate managing up, managing yeah. their peers, managing when they don't have any authority, all of these things that are much more the human side of what we do.
Yeah. Yeah. And experience definitely helps there.
Yeah.
You know, I had a manager one time that said that I took to a one of the rail meetings with accounting. I took my manager that had zero payments experience to the meeting, and he walks out of the meeting and he says, "Don't ever take me to another meeting like that again." And it wasn't because it was a bad meeting. It was because right. it was a topic he just didn't want to understand.
To go back to people not really understanding how payments work.
You know, but, you know, talking about, you know, then people managing up in my next annual review, my he says, nobody knows what you do.
Yeah.
Stop it. Yeah. Including you, my friend, because you canceled
the You had the opportunity.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of things that, you know, that come with experience and that having that mentor, I think, or watching other people, if there's, you know, others on your product team, yeah. watching how they do things and having, you know, the one-on-one coffees with the folks, you know, to help you get in, your foot in the door. And so that it'd be a lot easier for you to manage up, you know, There were a lot of times I wished I had that social skill, and you know, experience helped in the end.
Sure,
but in the beginning, you know, that's something that you have to work in and build yourself.
Man, I think
you sure. definitely need to take advantage of it, and you're only going to help yourself if you do those things.
Yeah. Humans are so complex. So I think this is part of the challenge of product management is that a lot of what we do is we are the interface into technology. And you would think, oh, well, that's just really logical. You take information from here and you put it in a format and you put it over there. But it's all about building software, and building software is built by humans. And so our job in a lot of cases is really, it's really managing people to get the right input and to create the right output. Yeah. And I'm going to look at Leah because you're an organizational design leader, you're a coach. And I think there are certain subsets of people that I work brilliantly with. And there are certain personality types that I really struggle with. So as a product manager, I may have fantastic skills, yeah. but my interfaces to certain types of humans doesn't function as well as it
yeah.
does to other humans. And so I think that as a product manager, and I also hear from a lot of like junior people, like, how do I manage without influence? Because I don't have control, but I need people to do stuff. And this is all about human communication.
Yeah.
And I just feel like that answer and those skills are just so in your wheelhouse and not in mine.
Well, and if you think about it, most product managers are coming, this is still not an industry where we're like, we all go train to be product managers and show yeah. up on day one as like I'm out of college and I'm ready to product manage, you're usually still coming from somewhere.
Yeah.
Engineering or marketing, or I was an accountant, like you're coming from somewhere. And so what you typically have is a skill in communicating in that context.
Yeah.
You might be an engineer who knows how to talk to other engineers, or an accountant who knows how to speak to finance, or, you know, a marketing person who really understands how to do the product market fit stuff or the content piece or growth or whatever. And then you're asked to sort of stand in the center of the room and say, everyone, look at me. Look at me. I'm in charge of communicating all the things, right? And you suddenly have to acquire different skills. So one of the things I tell young product managers all the time is figure out how to talk to people so they'll hear you. Mm. And you keep saying the same damn thing. You just might say it a little different to that guy and a little different to that person, and that girl needs it a different way. Just they need to be able to hear you.
Yeah.
Right? Does that make sense to you?
I think another thing that's important is realizing you can't do everything at once.
Right.
That's my whole motto.
I know. Why, you know, I've got this ready to go, but they're not working on it. You know, there's you know, resources are limited. You have what you have. Yeah. And, you know, you have to prioritize. And that's a skill, you know, product management skill you have to learn.
Yeah.
And I think that's one that will help you, especially if you're new, if you learn it sooner than later.
Yeah.
You know, prioritizing projects is the only way you're going to get things done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, 100%.
And, you know, you got to get on that boat and you got to row it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one thing that, as you said that, I was thinking, like, there are so many times when, you know, like if you have a craft of engineering, there is some just sort of, there's just some respect that's given to having that skill set and being like, oh, that person's an engineer, or that person's a designer, or that person does. And I think product managers get a little like, we don't know what they do, so I don't know whether or not we should respect it. And so, so there's so many people in a company that don't exactly know what product management is.
Yeah.
And that there is a craft there. Because yes. Our craft is, I can communicate to you and you and you, and I can prioritize things and I can move the, you know. And so I think sometimes we start to feel like, well, everyone else's career is precious and mine is somehow, I'm just glue standing in the middle.
Yeah.
Right? But there's some real, like, somebody has to be that.
Yeah. And it's a juggling skill, really. Yes. You have to, you know, you have to make friends with engineers. You have to make friends with the designers. You have to make friends with finance and accounting, tax and legal, you know, somebody's got to wade all those waters and, you know, to be able to do that successfully, you know, again, goes back to everything we've been talking about. You know,
does that mean we would make great politicians when we retire? Are you going into politics, Steve?
No, I'm not going into politics.
No. Yeah. No, I did. I think you're spot on. Like it does require that somebody has to be willing to wade into the deep waters of like, man, I don't know anything about that, but I'll go ask some questions and try to find out. Right.
Yeah.
So are informed enough to make decisions. And I think, you know, I really, and we talk about this on this podcast as well. It is not a job for everyone.
Yeah.
Like it's not everybody should be like, I want to be a product manager. Sometimes when people say that, I'm like, why? Why do you want to be a product manager? But tell me first why. Because it's not going to be easy. You're going to get your ass kicked
all the time.
No.
People are going to think that you're not doing anything when you're the one doing all the things. And it's not going to be a cakewalk. But if you love it, you love it.
Yeah. And the reward goes to the teams that deliver, not you.
Yeah,
like that's a nice, not only do you attract all of the poop and have to sort things out and prioritize things and make all the hard choices and tell people no, but when it's celebrated, like the team is shining, not you.
Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's the fun part, you know, because you're building something as a team.
Yes.
And when you're done, you have something that works.
Yeah.
And you know what? The teams that wade through this stuff together are like rock solid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like those are the teams that are fully aligned, fully count on each other, no blame, focused on the right problems, can bring up challenges in a really healthy way, can debate things without like getting all freaked out. Like those are the teams you want to join. Those are the teams you want to build. And that's the magic.
Yeah. Yeah. Agree.
But also, if you're thinking about going into product management and you can't answer Leah's question, like, why do you want to do this job?
I never thought about it like that, Leah, with the new folks, because I had folks at both Amazon and Expedia, you know, ask me to mentor them and help them get into product management.
Yeah.
And I wished I had said why.
Why? What do you think is happening over here? Before you say, I did the same at Klarna. I was responsible for anyone who wanted to come out of another competence into product management. I was the roadblock. I was the person that the CPO put in front of them and said, because I would say, why? Why do you want this job? What do you think is in it? And if you said something like, there's more money, then if you're in customer service or whatever, you know, or that's what one person one time, huge mistake, said, well, that just feels like that's where all the glory is.
Oh.
And I was all, go back, do more research, talk to more product managers, and then come on back. Let's talk after you've had a few more. I would almost always send them back. No, go have more, talk to these five people.
Yeah.
Right. And they would go, and then I would say, do you still want to do it? Sometimes they'd be like, no. Right. And sometimes they'd be like, yeah, I still do. I'm like, okay, well, come on, let's find you somewhere to get in. Right. Yeah, and we'll see if this works. But you had to have a good answer to that question, or I was like, no, get away from me. Get away from me and this product team. It's too hard. What would you say? What do you think? I mean, I guess I have some thoughts on this, but I'm curious what you think. Do you think leadership has evolved over time? Or do you think we're just the same as we always were? We just call it different things or think about it differently?
I think the tools are different.
Yeah.
But people are people.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the best leaders I ever had was my first job out of college.
Okay.
And my boss was, what I was doing was driving a snack food truck. And my boss at that time was probably the best boss and the best human I've ever worked for.
Nice.
And I learned so much from that guy. I had good leaders and I had some bad leaders across all my product experience. And I don't think the fact that it was 2025 versus 1995 made a difference.
Yeah.
You know, because people are people. And, you know, and again, you know, that's one of the things you have to learn as a product manager is, you know, how do you work in those environments?
Yeah.
And then, you know, sometimes, you know, I've been reading some things on LinkedIn. Sometimes the best thing is to just leave and go somewhere else.
Yeah. For sure.
Sometimes the best thing is, you know, take the lesson and learn it.
Yeah.
And you've improved the one skill and is, you know, that makes you a better product manager.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, that going back to the mentor thing, I think that helps having somebody around to help you guide yourself among the leaders that you're working for.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not only the leaders that you're working for, it's the leaders on the other teams that you may need to get them involved as part of the project. You know, we've talked about accounting and finance so much, you know, hey, accounting, we're going to do this project and it requires you to do a little bit of work. And well, we don't have time to do that.
We're not doing that. Okay. But you have,
you know, so you have to manage that too. So you know, how do you work with that type of leadership and figure out how to get into the prioritization of that project? You know, because those guys are, you know, whether it's engineering or accounting or tax or whatever, you know, they're managing their teams to for what they need to manage them for.
Yeah.
And you're knocking on the door.
Yeah.
And so you have to learn that it's not only your leadership, but other leadership too, that you have to work with.
Yeah. 100%. Marilyn, what do you say to that same question?
I mean, this is something we've talked about in a few different conversations. And I think there's different aspects to it. I think there is the like finding the leaders that you can trust with your career. Mm-hmm. So as a product manager, who am I going to entrust my career to? And that's like finding your boss and your boss's boss that are going to foster you and give you space, safe spaces to learn. I think to Steve's point, there are the lessons you learn from others and how you start to develop your own style of leadership, mm-hmm. And how that evolves over time. And that, I mean, I've learned a lot from people that I want to emulate. I tend to bring my own unique style to things. Like, I know you guys are both going to be shocked about this, but I tend to bring my own unique style to things. And the leaders that have allowed me to sort of like maintain my style, mm-hmm. But then still help me round out my skills. And then I've certainly learned from people that I just absolutely do not want to be. Like, you know, who I don't want to be is probably more important than who I do want to be. Mm-hmm. And then there's that introspective layer where, you know, sometimes you're being asked to do hard things or make hard choices. And, you know, that forces you to make choices that you wouldn't have made, you know, given other environmental concerns. And you have to sort of like be able to look yourself in the mirror and say, listen, that was the worst. And I made the right decision for the company and for the team. And I acted with as much empathy as I could. Or next time I need to act with more empathy. And then how do you like look inside yourself and like introspect really how you've led your activities and your team? And are you doing the best job that you can? And I think some of those like retrospective things are like gifts of age. And I probably didn't have a lot of that early in my career, as both of you guys can both acknowledge as well. I think I was a little bit of a bulldoze to get my product out the door sort of girl.
No.
They're lifelong skills, man. Your lifelong skills.
So question for you, Marilyn, along those same lines, do you find it different leading product versus other teams, or have you even led other teams?
Unsurprisingly, I want it all. Like, I want to lead product engineering design. I think the nicest thing about that for me is when you're leading product, you really have to sort of like ensure that your peers in design engineering are on the same page, they're organizing their teams the same way, you're organizing the groups optimally to fit together, but also in a way that allows you to solve business problems. Yeah. And that is a high energy activity. It takes a lot of work to get that group together functioning right. And I see a lot of divisional organizations, the leaders looking at their own team and not considering the impact on the rest of the team that it takes to get stuff done. Yeah. And that's like, when you find the people that you work well with, like hold on to them. But then if you go into a new industry or a new team, you've got to start over. So that takes a lot of energy. If you lead the whole thing, you just get to say, guys, this is how we're going. Yeah. And I will settle any disagreements, and we're going to optimize for org health and org structure and getting product out the door. And I found that's the fastest path to organizing teams for, you know, for productivity, for, you know, for positive, you know, health and contribution, for like for people happiness. And that kind of is my big love, Steve. Like my big love over the last sort of 6 or 7 years has been inheriting really broken teams that don't deliver, that hate each other, that all feel like they're the one that's being picked on, and sitting everybody down and hearing everything and then just being like, all right, I'm gonna make decisions. And I'll be mad at me, but this is how we're going to get to the right place together. And then watching them over the course of 3, 4, 5, 6 months evolve into high performance teams, like that's my jam. That makes me happy.
Cool. That's awesome that you've been able to do that.
Yeah. You should come out of retirement and try it.
No. I mean, there is some added pressure there, having done the same. Like, if this goes down, I go down, it goes down under my watch, and I'm the one at the top of the helm going, yeah, that was me. I made that mistake. That was all me, everyone. Look this direction. Don't look at
that. But isn't that awesome?
It's always been fine with me.
I will make it work.
Exactly. Yeah. Cause you can also pivot fast if you think it's going badly. If you have all the parts, then you can say, hey, we're making a move. We're doing this. We don't want to. Don't care. This is what we're doing.
and you're going to thank me later. Like later.
Make a good decision. So yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's really fair. So shall we lightning round?
Yes.
Sure.
Okay. All right. So first question, what was your very first job title in your very first real job, whatever that was? What was that job? What was the title?
I'm going to skip the snack food truck driver. Okay.
Sure.
It counts though, FYI.
My first real job after that, after graduating college, was regional office manager.
Nice, like Dwight Schrute. Like Dwight on The Office.
Yes, like Dwight. I never watched The Office, but yeah.
Yeah, he was, they used to always argue because he was the regional director and they are assistant regional director. And then somebody would say assistant to the regional director. Right. Like it was a slightly different word.
Yeah.
Okay. Marilyn, what was yours?
I mean, honestly, I started working at the age of 15 on fries at McDonald's, and I really haven't taken a break except for the last few months in my entire life. It's just been full steam ahead.
Yeah.
I skipped those because I worked in the tobacco fields and the blueberry fields.
Fun.
Yeah.
Poultry farms. I would work.
Product readers can come from anywhere.
Yes.
Blueberry fields or fries. How about you?
Exactly.
Yeah, I worked at McDonald's. I think, you know, there's a list somewhere of all the rich people who worked at McDonald's at some point in their career, right? Yeah. And like people who have gone on. But I sometimes joke that the pace you could run in a drive-thru window is basically the pace you run as a product manager. And yeah, when I worked at McDonald's, I would some nights I would dream that I was so tired I would lay down in the floor behind the counter. Because I was so tired. And so, but I've had that dream even as an adult with other jobs where I've been behind that counter, like curled up trying to get a nap because I was so tired. So I think it's same job, right?
I'll complete the cycle. I worked at McDonald's too.
Oh, yay! So funny. Yeah. I mean, nothing. You don't know how it feels to have that like grease on your face until you've worked in that.
Or to smell like fries for 3 days after you've had a couple of days off.
Yes. My mom wouldn't let me wear my shoes in the house. I had to leave my work shoes outside because they were so gross.
Yeah.
Right?
And like greasy footprints on your floor.
It was still when they all wore those little bow ties.
Yes, sir. Yes.
So gross.
I had it threefold when I was in college. Both my roommates and I, all three of us worked at McDonald's.
Nice.
It was, you know. There were always fries and apple pies around.
I was just going to say, don't tell the people at McDonald's, but like when I would be on the closing shift, somehow we would drop chicken nuggets like before close.
Right, and before close. We'd be
able to sell them.
Weird. Yeah. I don't know what we're going to do with all these chicken nuggets.
I think we need to arrest them for fraud. If anybody's listening to this podcast, they're going to send McDonald's police to my house.
Yeah, totally. All right, Steve, what's your favorite product that you've ever used but not worked on?
Oh, I hate to say this, but the iPhone.
Yeah.
The convenience of having everything in the world in your hand. Yeah. You can't beat that. You know, I used to think it was the internet and the laptop, but
yeah,
you know, the iPhone just kind of, and I'm sure Android does it as well, but it gets, you know, puts it all in one place in your hand.
Yeah.
And you can take it with you.
Yes.
And it's always on. Yes. And I can turn the ringer off. That's even more important.
I know. That's what somebody the other day asked me, because my phone doesn't, I don't have any sound on my phone. I just, but you know, it might buzz, right? And people were like, why don't you know when to answer it? I'm like, you think I don't hear my phone buzzing? Right? It's like, my ears are that good still. I don't need a ringer. Right.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't want to be a Steve Jobs fan, but the iPhone, you just can't beat it.
Yeah. Marilyn, what about you?
So I will tell you my favorite product suite right now is the games on the New York Times. So New York Times, I am the person that's committed to like not paying subscriptions as much as I can. And I don't like paywalls. They make me crazy. I subscribe to the digital version of the New York Times because I play those games every single morning. And that has led me to New York Times Cooking, and that has led me to the news. So like they have found, they found my gateway drug into their ecosystem. And it was Wordle for sure.
Yeah.
And so good jobs, whoever's running.
Whoever pulled you in, sucked
exactly
you in.
Exactly right.
How about have you tried to get that game on the iPhone?
So I got it on my iPhone too. And I will tell you, I love the crossword puzzle on my iPhone because I'm a huge crossword puzzle, like puzzle person. But mostly they're crap on your phone because the screen's this big. And that I can do the New York Times one all, like every day.
Nice. Awesome. That's great. I would say the Kindle. Like after all these years, I still love that I can be on my phone, be on a Kindle, be on an iPad, be on my, you know, laptop, whatever, and I can just show up on the page I was on. My Kindle dies, I can go to my phone, you know, and it just is, it still does what I want it to do. It's not fancy. It's backlit well, like all of the things, you know, the battery lasts forever, all the things that I don't want to have to think about when I'm trying to read a book, right? So for all the time and years, I don't need them to get any fancier. I'm just like, stick with what we know.
100% agree. And which version of the hardware do you have?
I don't even
remember. Paperwhite?
Yeah, I have Paperwhite.
So that's, I like, when they released a fancier version, I actually upgraded and then immediately downgraded again.
Yeah, me too.
Like the Paperwhite, whoever designed that as a product manager, like, thank you.
Yeah, I went up a hardware and gave it back. Was like, no, I don't want that. I gave it away and then was like, I'll just go back to my other one. I like this one.
Yep.
All right. So, Steve, tell us what your, do you have any retirement plans that are, that you're excited about other than just not working?
The first and most important thing is I get to spend more time with my kids.
Wow.
That's great.
You know, and, you know, they might not think I'm hanging out with them as much as they're thinking I'm hanging out with them too much, but, you know. I'm enjoying it. And they are some busy guys.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that, you know, I'm doing and chauffeuring them around and that to me is been a gift.
Yeah, for sure.
Other than that, you know, small projects, like, you know, last week I got to power wash my driveway, you know. You know, things like that.
In the middle of the day on a Tuesday.
Yeah, right? Exactly. And you know what? I stretched it out across 4 days.
Little of this, little of that. Now I can go watch a game. Now I can come back.
Exactly. Exactly. And I'm thinking about maybe playing some more hockey than just what I'm currently playing. But I don't know. I'm still debating that one. Vacations, obviously, I'm, you know, totally like to take my kids to places at least once a year where it's not only they can get away, but it's kind of like a fun learning trip.
Yeah. Yeah.
And beyond that, you know, in the future, when they're out of school and in college, you know, I want to get somewhere warm where I can, you know, do something year round and hopefully be near an ice rink where I can play a little bit of hockey.
We'll go somewhere warm where there's an ice rink. Excellent.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Good. I like it. I know there's gotta be some places.
Yes. Yes. I've been doing some research. I have some places in mind.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, we know for sure Arizona, but if you don't want to go to Arizona, there's other options.
Yes. Yes. And I'm not saying, cause I don't want anybody else to come.
No, exactly. That's what we said. So I lived in New Mexico for 16 years, and we used to say, people would say, it's hot there like in Arizona. We'd be like, yep, it's not. Now you don't have seasons like other places. Nope, we don't. We did. Like, we never wanted anybody to know that Albuquerque was actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like here in Seattle. You don't want to tell anybody the summers are fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it rains all the time, and you're like, yep.
Yeah, all the time. It's terrible. Right.
All 12 months.
Yeah. Well, Marilyn, you're not retired, but what cool thing are you doing?
Oh, wow. I mean, is now the time to disclose?
No, you don't have to disclose all the things you're doing.
Well, I am starting a distillery.
Steve's face just went, huh?
Shut the mic.
I missed that. You're starting a what?
A distillery.
Oh, nice.
I know. I'll tell you all more in the future, but I don't think I'd ever be able to retire. I feel like, I mean, it depends on the definition of retirement, but if I don't have anything to do, I'm going to get up to definitely no good.
Right.
And so I'd like to be able to, you know, work with Patrick and figure out what we're going to do when we stop working for corporate. And we've decided we're going to start a distillery, and then over time we'll spend more time on that than we will in corporate life. And I have a few extra cycles right now, so I'm the one dealing with the builders and the towns and the legal and the you know,
yeah,
all the people.
Super fun.
Yeah. That actually sounds really fun.
Does, doesn't it?
I mean, there's I don't even drink, but I was like, man, yeah, never start something like that, it would be awesome.
Exactly. I think there's an opening party in September or something that I think.
I'll send you an invite.
You have my email now.
I do have your email.
True.
It's how
true.
About you, Leah?
I'm just doing all the things that I am enjoying. Like, I'm trying really hard. You know, I took on a fractional CPO role, and then it sort of took over my life, which I was not the point, right? That was not the reason it was fractional, was so that it wouldn't do that. And now I'm like, I'm going to need to peel that back again and get back to some boundaries, you know? So that's something I'm working on. And then, so for me, it's been really interesting to learn like how to chase the things I love. Cause for so long, I just did a job, loved it, and just fell into it completely. And now I'm trying to figure out how can I do more than one thing? Right. And have boundaries and chase the things I care about, like, and that I'm interested in. So that's been fun. It's tricky. It's tricky for sure, but it's been really good.
And I think that comes with experience. You know, you get to the point where you know, this is what I want to do with my life.
Yeah.
A lot of times, you know, growing up, you're figuring out, what do I want to do with my life?
Who do I want to be? Who do I?
now we're like, I know what I want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know what I don't want to do. And
exactly.
You know, like, I had a, you know, the board would like this conversation yesterday, and everything in me was like, why did I sign back up for product? I don't want to do what the board wants me to do. Right. Like, I was like, why did I agree to this? Like, some part of me was like in a little rage book bubble. Like, I hate everything about that. I was like, why did I agree to do this again? And then I was like, calm down. Right.
And going back to one of your earlier questions, you know, for the new product managers is, you know, realizing that some projects are top down.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
You got to do it.
And I think one of the things you said that I think, piggybacking on that, like, one of the things I tell product managers who are out looking for jobs, you know, we all know the market's kind of rough and what, you know, what's out there. And I tell them, like, go ahead and look for what your like next dream is. And if it comes along, great. In the meantime, learn whatever you can learn.
Yeah.
Figure out what this job can teach you, even if it feels like a terrible thing to learn. Figure out what this job can teach you, and then you don't have to ever do it again.
Yeah.
If you hate it, go do something else. but take advantage of what's in front of you, what you're holding on to in this moment.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And if that's navigating politics, fine. If it's working in a top-down environment, fine. Figure out how to do that with a little bit of grace and some good humor.
And I think that's true for life in general.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can always make different choices.
But do what's in front of you.
Yeah, exactly. Steve, this was so fun. Thanks for agreeing to come and chat with us.
Thanks for asking. It's been awesome.
Yeah, it was so much fun. We really appreciate it. Sure, so if you're watching this and you want to talk about ideas that you have for retirement, ping me and Marilyn. We're always game on that. or if you have any topic ideas that you want us to touch on, feel free to let us know that as well. Thanks again, Steve. See everybody next time.
Bye. All right.